This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. When was the last time you went to the mall? There are signs Americans are getting more comfortable shopping indoors again. In a new survey from Morning Consult, 73% of people said they're somewhat or very comfortable going shopping at a mall. Even before the pandemic accelerated the shift to more spending online, though, malls were in trouble as tastes changed and anchor department stores and other retailers went out of business. But design critic Alexandra Lang says don't count out the American mall just yet. She's author of the new book, Meet Me by the Fountain, an inside history of the mall, which starts with Victor Gruen and the first enclosed shopping center he designed in Edina, Minnesota, Southdale, which opened in 1956. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So it sounds like you grew up, as I did, a fan of the mall. But what made you want to write this book from a design criticism standpoint?
I really felt like the mall got a raw deal in terms of architecture criticism. But now the largest number of malls are about 30 years old, and that means that we have enough distance from them to see them as historical objects. And I thought, what if I write a history about them that combines an analysis of their architecture and kind of their role in building cities and suburbs with an analysis of the cultural impact that they have come to have? I mean, people have really strong feelings about malls, and I feel like it's important to write about architecture that people have feelings about.
I was kind of surprised that a lot of the early malls were really ambitious architectural works. There was a focus on innovation and artwork and materials. But as you mentioned, they sort of quickly became the subject of derision by architecture critics and a lot of Americans, frankly. When did that change?
Well, I think in the first flush of mall buildings, say, you know, 1956 to the mid-1960s, a lot of the U.S.'s most ambitious architects were working on them. It was this brand new form, and they felt like they could really, you know, use their skills to shape it. But as malls became more popular and more began to be built, they were built in places that maybe didn't have the same income base, and so the developers didn't want to put as much money into the design. Architects also found out that, in fact, you didn't have the outside of the mall didn't have to look that nice for it to be popular. But most people's vision of the mall is of these blank boxes by the highway with a big department store logo on the side. And developers found that that was fine. People would still go to the mall if that's what it looked like. What they cared more about was what was happening on the inside.
The development of the mall, of course, intersects with all kinds of social and economic and racial history. And you describe how the suburban shopping mall was all about replicating the feel of downtowns without what many people found undesirable about urban environments, especially white people who were fleeing to the suburbs. How did the advent of the mall contribute to racial segregation and inequality?
Well, the mall was built to serve the families that were living in the new single-family home suburbs. And those suburbs, either de facto or by homeowners association, were for white families. There were very few suburbs to which Black, Asian, other people of color, in which they could buy homes. And having the mall meant that those people didn't have to go back to downtown to shop. They could live in this bubble world outside the city and not have to deal with things that they may have found distasteful, dirty, different about downtown.
So as I was reading this book, it kind of dawned on me, and I don't know why it took me this long to realize it. Of course, it makes sense that every decision that went into the design of malls was about maximizing sales, from the fountains to the artwork to the air conditioning. Can you talk about how malls were basically designed to keep people there, and even the stuff that wasn't on its face about shopping was about shopping?
Yeah. I mean, Southdale, in the original advertisements, they said 365 shopping days a year. You know, Southdale is in Minnesota. In the winter, people did not go downtown to shop. You know, there was cold winds, there was snow. So it was really sold as this way that store owners could keep shoppers, you know, kind of in their grasp all year round. And that's where we get a concept called the Gruen transfer, which, as I describe in the book, is that moment when your trip to the mall goes from being, you know, checking off your to-do list to being a pleasure in itself. It's things like plants and fountains and a nice food court where you can meet your friends. And so, of course, that means you stay at the mall longer, you make impulse purchases, you're kind of caught up in like the drama and scenography of the mall.
Fast forward to today. Obviously, the pandemic has not been kind to malls, which were already struggling from the shift to online shopping. But you think that we've exaggerated the death of the shopping mall. Why is that?
Well, everyone I talked to in retail said that the pandemic didn't change the trajectory of malls. It just accelerated the trajectory of malls. That they had already been going downhill in some cases, and the pandemic wasn't really changing the projections. But what I think has been over-exaggerated is that even if there is a mall die-off, which there definitely is, there are still going to be, you know, 700 to 800 healthy malls. And that's a lot of malls. So the rhetoric around the death of the mall, I feel like, gives people the idea that malls everywhere are just going to disappear, and they're not. The other thing I don't really love about the rhetoric around the death of the mall is that then I feel like once you consider something dead in our minds, it sort of goes away. But, you know, as an architecture critic and someone who's interested in urbanism, I actually want people to see malls as a place where we could do a lot of new and creative things in old cities. That this first generation of mall that was built, you know, 70s, 80s, and those are the ones that are more likely to be dead, they really offer an opportunity and a lot of open space that cities could rethink and build, you know, new kinds of community centers in.
All right. Alexandra Lang wrote the book Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. It's out now. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.